Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where, and just like that, in the blink of an eye that's been smacked by the slowest player in the league on a terrible no-call, the Lakers went from potentially having a clear path to the sixth seed and avoiding the play-in to now likely being forced to win two play-in games for the tremendous opportunity to face the Denver Nuggets in round one as the eighth seed. So close your eyes, take a deep breath. It's all almost over. For the rest of the league, that is, because the Lakers are coming best 10th seed in NBA history, baby. Lakers are 45-35. They are currently 10th in the West, and this is a big day in the association for the Lakers and everyone in the 7-10 seeds in the Western Conference. But for all intents and purposes, the Lakers have lost their ability to control their destiny at this point and are hoping that some of these teams in front of them can cannibalize each other. So here we are. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
I am great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. And so this wasn't supposed to be what we were going to talk about today. We were supposed to be talking about how the Lakers were tied with the second best record in the West coming out of the All-Star break. We were supposed to be talking about what a juggernaut offensive team the Lakers had become. We were supposed to be talking about how they finally turned the corner by proving us wrong and winning a strangely scheduled pivotal Cavs game at home after a long road trip. We were supposed to be talking about D'Angelo Russell beating all the allegations, beating his own career high in three-pointers made in a season, and setting himself up for playoff redemption. Instead, Tommy, we unfortunately have to talk about how the Lakers' season may soon be over, how the Lakers may have played their last home game of the year, and how the earlier sins of the season have brought them to this stupid place where an AD eye injury and a LeBron sick day have greatly crippled their chances at making a strong playoff run. Life comes at you fast. But as they say, play stupid galaxy brain games, win stupid galaxy brain prizes. And that's exactly what Ham and the Lakers did and have done. So with that said, Tommy, vibe check. As a fan, have you come to terms with the fact and notion that the Lakers season may potentially be over very soon? If you have or haven't, how over is over for you? Is the Lakers season over, or are you still holding out hope for a miracle?
I'll still hold out hope. You know, when you have healthy LeBron and healthy AD, like, anything could happen. I know there are some matchups, like, there are some worst-case scenarios here that are pretty worst-case scenario at this point. But you know, there's still some paths that are somewhat reasonable. It's scary because it's like not in our control. So I think it's like the natural instinct of fans to just assume the worst case outcome, you know, for our seeding. So I'm just willing at this point, it's like, you know, there's two games left. So I'm willing to like just wait and see what happens here, what happens in some of these other games. I think we'll have like a lot more information after the games today. And then we'll just assess, you know what I mean? We still have LeBron, we still have AD, we still have, like, you know, guys who have been in and out of the lineup who are like now healthy. And I think the issue for this team is going to be like matchups and who we get, depending on our play in and if we are able to advance to the first round. Like, you know, if we have to win two games just to play Denver on, you know, on the road, like that's probably not going to be great. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of also, to like the point that AD and LeBron have made, you know, and part of this is just like you have to do this, I think, as an athlete. You have to sort of convince yourself of something that's not actually true. But, you know, they've sort of been saying like, it doesn't matter if you're the one seed, it doesn't matter if you're the 10 seed, like you have to win games, right? And it's like, yeah, that's true. And I don't take that like in a silly way. Like, I think it's like easy to be sarcastic in response to that, but that's like literally the mind. Like, if the team has quit already, there's no point in playing the game. So they have to have that mindset, right? It's like they've sort of backed themselves into a corner, but it's not in, you know, they, it's not like there's no path to escape from it. So you know, we'll see what happens. I still think overall, I like the guys on the team. I like the roster. You know, worst case scenario, we flame out and we think about a new coach, which is not bad.
Yeah, and we'll get into all of those scenarios in a second. So it's funny that you bring up the AD and LeBron statements throughout the season of not worrying about where their seating is. On one extent, I agree with them. On the other extent, in the less hopeful, positive extent, maybe more cynical, maybe not cynical, but in a more practical way, at the very least, we're going to see if they can still do that. You know what I'm saying? In the sense that this season, they have been largely healthy, but we've still like barely managed to scrape out of the play-in, largely because the West is just a juggernaut this season. But I'm interested in seeing whether age 39 LeBron and Anthony Davis, with as nicked up and bruised up as he's been, can they still, in these single elimination games, in game sevens, can they still carry a team on their back? So worst case scenario, we're going to get our answer to that and then have to, like you said, assess from there, right? Now, you came at that question with more of a hopeful tone, which I actually agree with a lot of your sentiment, but how big of a gut punch were those last two games versus Minnesota and the Warriors to you? Because for me, I guess it's the first time that up until that point, especially with how we were rolling, I thought we were ready to take off to the moon, man. And I thought that we were ready to ride some sort of momentum wave that would at least give us a little bit more of a rampway in terms of making a longer playoff push, kind of reminiscent to last season. But after those two games and seeing the scenarios play out in front of us, I think that was the first time that I felt the mortality of this season. And I was like, oh, that could be the last home game of the season. This could be done next week. And I wasn't necessarily prepared for that. Did you get any of that sense?
I didn't. I mean, okay, look, I agree with you that like, based on how everything was trending, I also thought that we were gonna, there was a chance that we could ride a hot wave into the sixth seed. And I think like, had we won those two games based on how things are already kind of shifting, we may have very well been the sixth seed. And so that, you know, was always sort of in the back of my mind, but it required, you know, perfection, which is hard to do even against like bad teams. I mean, we saw like the Warriors almost lost to Portland last night. I mean, it was like tied with like 5 minutes left to go in the fourth. And Portland, by the way, was not playing Anthony Simons and Jeremy Grant and like any, so it's like any game you could lose to any team. And so like with that in mind, it was always the case that it was tenuous, you know, what we beat the Warriors, but we lose to the Grizzlies, right? On the road, like in a throwaway game for the Grizzlies that their young guys just come out and start bombing threes and you know, have energy and beat us. So I guess, you know, I always sort of viewed it as tenuous. I mean, once AD got hurt, I think, you know, in the Minnesota game, that's like when I was like, okay, you know, hopefully it's just this one. Like you sort of see the standings tick away. When he got hurt in that one, I was like, okay, cross off six. The best I think we're going to do now is seven because we're losing this game, right? When I saw that he was missing the next game too, it was like, okay, you know, it's like we can't beat the Warriors without AD. They've like abused us without AD. And so, you know, that's sort of you know, then you sort of like dig yourself deeper into the hole. I guess I just like, I always sort of viewed it as tenuous in either direction. Mm-hmm. And like one game doesn't make or break a season. It's unfortunate timing with like the AD injury, because it does feel like there have been a few, like, can't criticize AD. He's had an all NBA season on both ends of the court. But there have been a couple of games this season where it was like, okay, like, you know, you were playing like the most important. I mean, the last time we played the Warriors, didn't he get like hit in the face? And like, we were
the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's like, you just kind of, I don't know how bad it is. I'm not trying to say like he should have played. I'm just like, was this one of those cases where, you know, the coaches say like, well, if it was a playoff game, he would have played, because like, these are effectively playoff games for us. So, you know, that's a little bit frustrating, I think, as a fan. But anyway, it was disappointing, but it's still like, to me, it is what it is. We're going to have to win some games against some tough teams anyway.
So you were always teetering between the season's over or maybe we make a run. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Okay. And even if we, by the way, fall to 10, I'm not ready to say it's over, but we'll see.
Sure, sure. I think that's probably the more balanced stance to take. I think I had let myself get too caught up on the other end of the spectrum in terms of, here we go, this is our time, here's how we take off the way that we did last season and make it all the way to the Western Conference Finals with just the right seedings playing out. And it didn't happen. And I, unfortunately, it kind of followed the same trend of the season where just when it seems like the Lakers had finally turned the corner, some random thing happens that takes us off course. And you know that momentum is such a delicate thing. Once that happens, all of a sudden, the vibes suck again. Confidence is low. People are wondering whether or not the last run of the month was real or anything like that. And then it snowballs the other direction, right? So that was my biggest fear. And I think my biggest fear moving forward, Tommy, is the fact that no matter what we do, Darvin Ham at the end of the day is still our coach. So that's always going to cap whatever run we go on if we go on a run. So in summary, I guess I'm a little bit more in the you Googleizing stage than you are in terms of eulogizing this season. But that said, this group has been very resilient. And that's the one thing that, so they've been consistent in two things this season. They've been consistent at being inconsistent, but also they've been consistent at being relentless and not backing down when their backs are fully against the wall. And now they will have the opportunity to show that to us again to the fullest extent. So yeah, like you said, I genuinely like these group of guys. I think they have fought and scraped their way back to a place of competency. They have brought us some incredible moments this season with some amazing individual feats from several different players that we wanted to see growth from. I think we've seen that growth. And frankly, Tommy, I don't want the season to end early because the off-season prospects for this team, of how to improve this team further from this point, they don't look very good. Just a spoiler alert. Anyways, so today we're going to talk about, the current state of the Lakers, maybe talk about the disappointing last two games and caveat it beyond the obvious of LeBron James and Anthony Davis being out. And then we shall obviously break down the Lakers' play and playoff prospects. And maybe along the way, we shall also bitch and moan about how much of a cautionary tale this season has been with regards to unnecessary self-inflicted wounds. But before we get to all that, as the season may be coming to a close, I wanted to remind you guys to please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. If you don't use that app, please hit up our Spotify page and give us 5 stars there. For today's Apple Podcast reading review of the day, we of course shall have our impressionist extraordinaire Tommy Alexander read our review. And today he shall be channeling none other than Ham Pockets himself, Coach Darvin Ham. So whenever you're ready, Coach D. Ham, take it away.
This review is entitled Passionate Lakers Fans by Jeremy Lakeshow Rams. Balanced analysis of the Lake Show. Love their energy and wordplay intro for every episode. Must listen. That's it.
Nice. Thank you, Jeremy Lakeshow Rams, for that wonderful review. I'm glad that you like the wordplay. Tommy, that was also a terrific rendition of Coach Darvin Ham. I'd like to ask you now, what went into your channeling of Coach Ham there? Because you really nailed his just spastic, not knowing what to do-ness of it all. But yeah, from your end, what did you channel there?
This was an easy one. I just read it with my hands in my pockets. The voice just
came out. Oh, ayo, there you go. So that's what it sounds like when you have your hands in your pockets and you read a review. Thank you very much. Yes, please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. All right, guys, let's talk about the last two games, Golden State, Minnesota. I don't want to go into the nitty-gritty of how those games went down, but Tommy, I want to know how you feel about how you assessed those games and the perspective you took, because just taking a zoom out approach and not talking about how this is like indicative of, you know, the terrible process we took throughout the season to get to this point where these two games end up crippling your season. I agree. It should never have come to that point. We can talk about, you know, the sins of the past in a second. But with regards to just these two games on the surface, I kind of want to caveat these two games, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but I kind of empathize with all of our players because this team was rolling. They had done their job up until this point, having won like 12 out of their last 14 games. They came home after a successful road trip on a random noontime start and dominated the Cavs. They looked ready for this playoff push. And then, unfortunately, they were just hit with some very ill-timed bad luck. And this isn't just like bad luck in the sense that we don't have AD and LeBron for a full game and then we don't have AD for the next game. But if you boil down the actual bad luck we had, these injuries literally came out of nowhere and disrupted the lead-up preparation of both of these games, both of these important games. On Sunday, the day after we just dominated the Cavs, LeBron was all of a sudden ruled out just an hour or two before the game because he was throwing up and had to go home. The Lakers were expecting him to play.
Yeah.
And then they came out of the gates and started pretty well against the Wolves, even in spite of that. AD was playing well. But then AD obviously gets smacked in the eye and leaves the game and never returns. That is just worse. That's worse than normal bad luck. You know what I'm saying? Because the Lakers had to adjust on the fly. And then on Tuesday, the Lakers were expecting both AD and LeBron to play. AD tried to give it a go and was at the arena, but he was still having migraines, so he ended up sitting. And then LeBron James only got to the arena about an hour before and was still sick. Like, look, I know it's these NBA players' jobs to stay ready with regards to, you know, Austin Reeves, Spencer Dinwiddie, Rui Hachimura, stay ready. And it's not like Reeves and D'Lo and Rui haven't done this before with regards to stepping up in LeBron and AD's absence. But the way those absences occurred, the out of nowhere, just minutes before switch up way that they occurred, that's tough for any team, you know, let alone a team who has been playing a certain type of way the last few weeks. And it's tough for players of any team to adjust on the fly like that. And it's almost better. It would almost have been better, Tommy, if we had known in advance before the game ever started that AD wasn't playing, that AD and LeBron weren't playing versus the Minnesota Timberwolves, and that AD definitely wasn't playing versus the Golden State Warriors. But because each injury happened right before the game or within the game itself, it's just tough for Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, Spencer Dinwiddie, Gabe Vincent. It's hard for all of those guys, Jackson Hayes, hard for all those guys to prep and shift their roles in that way when they've been rolling in their respective roles, slotted correctly, as a team that's been, you know, had the second best record in the Western Conference since the All-Star break. And then all of a sudden they're like, D'Lo, AR, you know, take the reins. So obviously I'm not excusing some of the players' individual play over these last two games. I'm just empathizing a bit with the context that they were unfortunately given that's tougher than normal. So do you kind of take that same perspective?
I take the exact same perspective. I think there was just way too much of the the timing is unfortunate, right? It's like you said, right before these games, guys were going down. AD went down during the game. We didn't know LeBron wasn't going to play until like an hour before the Minnesota game. Then fine. It's like you say, okay, fine, Golden State. Now we can adjust with no AD. We know he's probably not going to play. Maybe in like the day of practice leading in between, like maybe they got that word. They still didn't know whether LeBron was going to play until like right before. And by the way, when he played, like, yeah, he put up his numbers he always puts up, but anyone who watched that game could tell that he was lacking like the energy and explosiveness that he normally has. Which, you know, has a trickle-down effect on the rest of the team. So I can't really hold either of the losses against any of these guys. Like, everyone looks bad when the whole team isn't playing. The Warriors have been red hot, and they've been playing. They're playing for a playoff seeding. Minnesota was obviously playing for a top seed. I mean, again, the Warriors played the day, or like 2 days after they played us. They played Portland. No Draymond, no Klay Thompson, and they almost lost that game, and no Gary Payton, right? So it's like, this is not like a thing that's unique to us. It's like you lose critical rotation players at a time like that, you're probably going to lose the game. And for us, it's even worse. It's not just critical rotation players. Like, maybe we can win a game without LeBron. We have not been a good team, even close to a good team, not just in the games that AD has missed, but when AD is not on the court, we're a really bad team, you know? So it's like, that's something that at some point someone's going to have to figure out the solution for that, because like the solution can't be AD just needs to play 75 games, 38 minutes a game, you know, every year, or else we're going to be a bottom seed. Yes. But that is the circumstance of these last few games. And we're just like, it is what it is. At the end of the day, it comes down to talent in a lot of these cases. And we were going to get out-talented by Minnesota without LeBron and AD. We were going to get out-talented by the Warriors without AD and sick LeBron. It just, that is what it is. Honestly, the only positivity I take from this is if we somehow get matched up with the Warriors in the play-in. I just find it very, very hard to believe that the Warriors are going to beat us four times this year and three times in a they've already beaten us three times in a row. I find it hard to believe they're going to beat us four times total, all four times in a row. You know, we would be coming in with a chip on our shoulder and with AD, who was missing in two of those games. So, you know, anyway, that's the positive I take from it. But yeah, there's nothing we could have done to win those games.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And again, the thing that I keep coming back to is you need to mentally have been in the state to know that these guys were absent, and in each of the games they happen very willy-nilly, sometimes within the game, and that's just a tough thing to deal with. Now, I don't know if you have an answer to this. I guess we have to address this because we are the D'Angelo Russell podcast, but I honestly don't know what happened to him in that Golden State game. It was a very unfortunate timing for D'Angelo too, because he just played the worst defense I've ever seen, and that's saying a lot for, you know, D'Angelo Russell, and he just seemed very unengaged. Do you have an answer for this? Because that was one of the worst games I've seen D'Angelo Russell play, even though he had like 14.7 assists and like I think he had zero turnovers that game. But obviously there are a couple factors that happen. Golden State put a lot of length on him, and obviously when you don't have AD, you can funnel more of that length to D'Angelo Russell. That bothered him. Secondly, there was this unit, Tommy, the Taurean Prince at the four, Spencer Dinwiddie at the three, Gabe Vincent at the one, and D'Angelo Russell at the two unit to close the third, that for whatever reason, D'Angelo Russell wasn't handling the ball within that unit, which made no sense. But then even when Ham brought the starters back in the fourth, D'Lo just seemed very passive. It almost seemed like he was the sick player for whatever reason. I don't know. I'll just say this. It was very disappointing to see, just because you know that that's going to warp things again into D'Angelo Russell never comes up in big games. Look at him. He's already had two bad games in a row. I don't even think he had a bad game versus Minnesota. He had like 15 points, 11 assists, and 7 rebounds. He just shot poorly in that game. And if anything, he was the one who helped lead the charge back to make it a game along with Jackson Hayes. But with regards to the Golden State game, yeah, that was a very poorly ill-timed, one of the worst games D'Angelo Russell has had games that D'Lo managed to put up. Do you have any answers for that one, or just...
Yeah, I think D'Lo is like, he's a streaky player, and he feeds his energy sort of builds on like how he's doing offensively and whether his jump shot's falling. That just, there have been countless players like this through NBA history. It's not like a new thing. And I think
he's done a better job this season of counteracting that. I mean, the game before with Minnesota, his jump shot wasn't going right, but he still found a way to be effective. But I think against a team like Golden State with the length that they have and with LeBron James next to him, I think he has more of a tendency to just defer, especially if his shot's not falling, right?
But yeah, but I mean, like, that's like most guys on the team, right? Like Rui, when his shot's not falling, he has a tendency to disappear too, right? It's just like that's like the nature of non-superstar players in many cases. Yeah. And that's why D'Lo is like a really, really, really good, I would say elite role player, but he's not a perennial all-star. And so that's kind of what separates some of these guys sometimes. But again, I can't point the finger at anyone else on the team. Not everybody else on the team is like getting paid a combined $80 million to go out there and like win us every game. And when you're missing two of those guys, like you're just not going to like those guys are 75% of your salary cap expenditure. Like if they're not playing, you're probably going to lose. This is not like a February road game that like people need to take a break and you can muster up some energy from your role players to squeeze out a win. Like this is end of the season, critical games. These teams are all playing, like these are playoff games because they're playing for seeding. And we just, there was not a chance we were going to win those games without our two stars at, without our two stars at max strength.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think we need to stop placing these. It's funny that fans who don't think D'Angelo Russell is an all-star anyways in the first place continue to place all-star expectations on a $17 million player who, you know, Austin Reaves and Rui Hachimura, as you mentioned, fit in that same bucket. And the last game versus Minnesota, Austin Reaves had a terribly poor game as well. It's going to teeter back and forth like this with these ancillary players. That said, let's take it to break. When we return, let's get into the playoff scenarios, maybe talk about the way the season has gone, and then see what is ahead for the Lakers to close this season out potentially. So we will catch you guys after the turn.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, I think we did a pretty good job of taking a cool, calm, collected approach to the last two games, even though it was a very big gut punch to the Lakers' playoff chances. So we looked at things in a vacuum with regards to those two games. But if we look at things, if we spread things out and look at the entirety of the season, I kind of feel like those two games have sort of been almost a terribly poetic karmic result of us not taking care of business when we should have. And it was almost a reflection of a long line of the coach or players making excuses, the coach scapegoating the wrong players, the coach not holding himself accountable. Maybe that extends to the players as well. Many were to blame along the way, but to have two random happenstance injuries to AD and LeBron come out of nowhere after a season in which they did not have any real long-term injuries, and then for those two injuries in just two games be the defining factor in our season, in my opinion, it shouldn't have come down to that point. And it's almost like we kind of got what we deserved. So I don't know if you agree with that or not. In my opinion, we can look at those two games in a vacuum and understand why they lost those two games. But with respect to those two games crippling our season because of things we did up until this point, whether it's not taking certain games seriously and Darvin Ham continuing to say, like, it's a marathon. I can't believe people are living and dying by single games, so like silly. Just 3 weeks ago. For me, I agree with Darvin Ham now. We shouldn't have been living and dying so heavily on these single two games if we had just taken care of business. And we're at the point now, Tommy, where, you know, Lakers Nation is at each other's throats again, arguing over these non-all-star players of with regards to who didn't step up or not. You know, like thrusting all-star expectations onto non-all-star players like Rui Hachimura, Austin Reaves, and D'Angelo Russell for not stepping up when it's like, we should not have been living and dying on these two games. And this could have been avoided with better coaching, better medical management, better front office assessment of the roster throughout the season, And I don't know, just better process overall. And that includes like when LeBron James and Anthony Davis decided to sit back to backs throughout the season, you know? So do you agree with that larger assessment of the shoddy process that we took with regards to this season, even if at that time it seemed like the right thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the season, it's sort of like a game, right? Like in a last second shot goes in or out, that's not the whole game. You know, the plays before that leading up to the shot, maybe those impacted the end of the game. And same thing with the season, right? It's like 82 game season. We lost two unfortunate games. But look, these were tough games against playoff teams at the end of the season. Those games were not the games that we should have been banking on, right? It's like, that's like, to your point, over the course of an 82 game season, you play all the teams, you play the good teams and you play the bad teams. And so when you're losing to the Spurs in December, you know, like that's the type of thing that's going to come back to bite you. When you're going on like these, you know, absurd stretches of like 6-12 ball with like non-offensive starters in the rotation, and you're just sort of taking this as though there's some like greater purpose to throwing away all these like games that you should just be adding to the win column at that time. Like there was never a greater purpose, right? It was just like a lack of direction and a lack of instinct and recognition of like what was going on the court. So this season, was not won and lost in those two games. It was a whole season of nonsense that led to this. We said the whole year that this team was performing below the talent that it had, right? It's like going into the season, even the championship season, right? We never go in saying like, oh, for sure, this team is a lock number one seed. We knew the Denver Nuggets were going to be around. We knew the Clippers are always around. Phoenix had put together their big three. Like we knew it was going to be a competitive West, but we felt like this team was a playoff team based on how they closed the season last season. And we thought that maybe a lock playoff team would be like a safe bet. And we couldn't get there, right? And over significant stretches of the season, we have shown that we could get there. And so it's like, you got to look back to those, again, like the first pretty much, it's not like, oh, the quarter of a season we were experimenting. I mean, it was over 40 games, you know, that we were like still messing around with who should be starting and like, do we have enough defense and we're not leaning into this all offense lineup? And why does it seem like we're playing all these defensive lineups, but we're still giving up 125 a game and we can only score 90 because like, we don't have any offensive players out there. You know, so it was like, we wasted over 40 games doing that stuff. And it's just like bad process. And that's something that I'd like to see cleaned up with whoever the coaching staff is moving forward. Like, That's like, you know, if people remember back to the championship season, it's not like we were playing those preseason games like they were NBA finals games, but like we had a winning record that preseason. We played lineups that we intended to play during the season, and we got a sense of, you know, how we were going to approach it. And we came in and we had a core rotation set from game one. We started that season like 18-3. You know what I mean? Like that's what a championship team does. And we had a light schedule, if folks remember, to like start that season, and we handled it. And this season, it didn't matter. Light schedule, difficult schedule. It was like the team overall was like kind of agnostic because it didn't matter like who we were actually playing. It just mattered what decisions the coach was going to make on that given night. And those types of minor things here and there cost us just countless games.
I think the most disappointing part too, and the thing that exacerbates all of those things, Tommy, is the coach having an excuse for everything along the way and never taking accountability for anything, to the point where we got that amazing quote from Darvin Ham after the Lakers lost to a Miami Heat team that didn't have their stars, where Darvin Ham said, "It's almost worse to not have your role players available than it is to not have your stars available." And I was like, "You're talking about missing D'Angelo Russell, who you just benched and only played 18 minutes? Like, what are you talking about?" You know?
Yeah.
Like, everything that comes out of Darvin Ham's mouth this season, I mean, just do better, you know? I would feel at least better if you could acknowledge, I screwed up here, I screwed up there. You know, he had this quote where the reporters asked him, do you think you should have gone to this starting lineup sooner? And he's like, coulda, woulda, shoulda. We're here. You can say all of these different things, but we're here. We're here now, so we just got to move forward. And I was like, what are you talking about, dude? Anyways, all that to say, today is today. You have to take care of today before you think about tomorrow. And it's unfortunate because now our tomorrow, we might not have a tomorrow because of the things that we did yesterday. You know, when we should have been taking care of business and approaching things. Like the guys always say, like LeBron says, you always just approach things game by game, day by day, but it does not seem like this coach and some of these players have done that, you know? And it will always end up biting you in the butt in the end, and it's kind of where we're at right now. The Lakers have a chance to turn that around, but it shouldn't have been this hard.
Yeah, I the only other thing I'll say on this, because there's like naturally a lot of now Vogel versus Ham comparisons going on. It's like there are certain aspects of what Ham has done with this group that are better than Vogel. I mean, I will go sure. so far as to say like what Ham did with this roster this season, he may have actually ended up in at least the same, if not even a better position than where Vogel ended up, because Vogel, the problem with Vogel, right, is he was so committed to his defensive side of the court that like we put up historically good offensive numbers under Ham. That was not just all talent. We have a talented roster of offensive players, in my opinion. There have been more talented rosters of offensive players on the Lakers, and we put up franchise historic numbers in the second half of the season offensively. I just think that there needs to be like a lot more accountability in like rotations and those types of things, and like getting guys up for the games, because like that was one thing about Vogel that you never had to question, is his teams would be prepared for those games, and it felt like every single game there was a game plan. And here it doesn't feel like there's a game plan. It feels like there's a team philosophy for how we want to play, but we're just going to apply that with indifference to whoever our opponent is. And that's what led to a lot of these like outleary shooting nights from opponents, because like when your team philosophy is whoever are the two worst 3-point shooters on your roster, we're just not going to guard those guys when they're on the court. Like, you can't just blindly continue to like be like, no, that's our team philosophy. We're doing it. And then you have LeBron on the court, like, you know, shrugging his shoulders and like putting his head down, and like, you know, maybe he could have better body language, one could argue, but you know, it's like he's doing that in response to watching his teammates comply with the game plan that's allowing Draymond Green to stand there wide open and make 6 threes in a row. Who's, you know, by the way, is having like a career high, like 3-point shooting season himself. So like, there's no like situational context with this group.
Sorry. Can I hammer home that point?
Yes.
Even further, because if you remember last season, to close out the Golden State Warriors series, if you remember, Darvin Ham started Dennis Schroeder with the starting unit, and we closed out the Warriors. We move on to game one of the Denver Nuggets series, and Darvin Ham was like, well, Dennis Schroeder helped us out the last series, and I did start with him the last game. Why don't I copy and paste the starters? Even though I've been starting with Vanderbilt this entire time, let me just copy and paste and see how it does against a front line of Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., and Nikola Jokic, and now we have Austin Reeves playing 3 to start game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. So that is another example of like not like weird, shoddy decision-making that doesn't, that he's not applying to the context and situation at hand. Other examples last season include DNPing Rui Hachimura versus the Chicago Bulls because he wanted to reward Lonnie Walker. Now, you could argue that that came back into play against the Warriors in the playoffs, but like, these are the types of things that Ham does that to me just seem nonsensical. But to your point about context and situation, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's the thing that has always been frustrating about this group. It's like, when we got to the playoffs and we got to see Ham and his staff operate in the playoffs, okay, now it becomes like a little bit more strategic, and you could see the strategizing of how we're going to like defend certain lineups, how we're going to defend certain plays, and it seemed like guys could get a little more locked in. But you got to coach over a season too, and you got to have philosophies for both. And the philosophy for your regular season coaching cannot be, I have Anthony Davis and I'm just going to let every other team shoot wide open threes and be the worst 3-point defensive team in the NBA. Like, and notwithstanding all of the numbers dumped in, you know, dumped on you, you continue to go back and continue to go back and continue to go back. So I don't know what the answer is for this, for a coaching staff, for us moving forward. It's like, on the one hand, you have LeBron and AD, so you want some veteran experience. On the other hand, like, you know, Ham has been around the league as an assistant for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And like, that didn't seem like it translated well to the head coaching. So I don't know. I think this team has done a good job of scouting talent in players. They clearly have not done a good job scouting talent in coaches. Like, and so I think that's going to continue to be a problem for us. But, yeah, you know, that's something that has to be cleaned up, whether it's this staff or somebody else. It cannot be another season of making excuses for injuries and, well, oh, Gabe Vincent, like, you know what the narrative is going to be when the season is over. Like, Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent were so important to what this team needed to do offensively, you know, that, or defensively, that, like, it just threw everything off. Missing those two guys for 80, 90% of the season, that's what caused this season to tank.
That's gaslighting,
my friend. It's just gaslighting, you know, and it's frustrating because it's like, you did have LeBron and AD, and those two guys alone, you should have been able to cobble 5-man groups around them that would work.
You had LeBron, AD, Rui, AR, and D'Lo.
AR
all
didn't miss
65
a whole game.
Plus
games. Yeah, AR didn't miss a game the whole season. D'Lo, other than games that he was forced out, he's going to play like 75 plus. Like, you know, it's like Rui, yeah, you had for 65 plus, even though, yeah, but that, like, that's a good, another example of the gaslighting. It's like talking about how, well, Rui was in and out of the lineup and with injuries and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you didn't put him into the starting lineup till like 2 months ago. You know what I mean? It's, yeah, like, yeah, he played significant stretches of time, you know, before then, and you could have done it. And by the way, you know what a lot of teams do when it's like a starting player comes back from injury? It's like one or two games off the bench at most, or you just plug him right back into the starting lineup. Yep. The reason you didn't do it is because you weren't committed, because you have no idea what you're doing in terms of building 5-man groups around LeBron and AD that work. That's like, the, again, another, not to say Vogel's better or worse or whatever, but that's one thing that staff consistently talked about was 5-man numbers. And you never hear Darvin Ham talk about 5-man numbers.
Because he can't.
Because the 5-man groups that he wants to play, the numbers don't match what he expects, right? So he just ignores them. And so that's like the problem that, you know, when people, it's like a problem, like, you know, as most see, like, on the internet, just browse Twitter for 5 minutes. It's like, if you come at someone with a point that they have no rebuttal for, like hard data, they just like brush it off like that, then the data is irrelevant. And that's like what Darvin Ham seems to do with these 5-man groups. He's decided that Taurean needs to be like one of his best players. He's decided that like Cam Reddish, who, by the way, I thought on balance had like a okay season for us, like
when he was healthy.
And you know, it's like, but you are the coach and it's your job to figure out where to maximize that guy's effectiveness. And he consistently found ways to put his guys in positions to fail, and they failed. And so that's like all on the coaching, and that needs to change.
I 100% agree with you. Taurean Prince, by the way, has the worst cumulative plus minus on the team the entire season, but you won't hear Darvin Ham bring that up. Okay, before we get to the play and outcomes, really quickly, 2 minutes, Tommy, do you have any thoughts on LeBron and AD? I'm going to switch the topic away from the coach and actually place the focus on either it's the medical staff or LeBron and AD themselves, but I don't agree necessarily with the way that they've handled these back-to-back rest plans throughout the season, even with regards to strength of schedule. I mean, we tried to do this. We played the Spurs back-to-back coming out of the IST, and I believe AD sat the next game, and then we lost that game. Or maybe it wasn't back-to-back. Anyways, there have been several back-to-back sets where AD and LeBron have switched off taking a rest game, and obviously they know their bodies better than anyone else, and LeBron has more of a rationale for that because he really is dealing with this ankle tendinopathy thing since the start of the year. But I just don't agree necessarily with, if they can actually go, I think they should go, even if it's just for 25 minutes, because inevitably what they're doing is, what we see now with regards to if we had just taken care of business with a lot of those back-to-backs, if they had played both of those games, we would have won more of those back-to-back sets, Tommy. Because on the year, we are 4-11 on trying to complete both of those back-to-back sets, you know? If they had played every single back-to-back set, I think we would have won, you know, what is it? 6 out of 9 of those 15 back-to-back sets, and we wouldn't be in the situation we are now. And guess what? Now LeBron James is going to have to put more pressure on his bum ankle. Anthony Davis, with all the nicks and bruises that he's added up, is going to have to put more burden on his shoulders to win 2 play-in games, potentially on the road, and then face the Denver Nuggets. So for me, again, make this quick, but like, don't agree with the back-to-back plans, whether it's coming from LeBron and AD or the medical staff.
It's poor process. And again, it's like, this should all be stuff that's coordinated with the coaches and everybody else, so everybody's on the same page of how we're going to handle it, right? Because AD and Bron, even that championship season, it's not like they both played every back-to-back, okay? So we can deal with it, but there needs to be a consistent plan. And to your point, it just never felt like there was a consistent plan. It's like, let's play the guy, let's play both of them against, you know, the Portland Trail Blazers, and then second night of the back-to-back, we play a mid team that like we could beat on the road if we had both, but like we're going to rest one, so then we get blown out. You know, that it just felt like the whole season was kind of like odd decisions like that, and frankly not taking the 82 game season seriously. And to your point, this is what happens, right? It's like everyone gets so bogged down in the moment. Oh, well, you know, in February and January, you have people telling you like, well, this will help long term. And then you get to this point of the season where it's like, okay, now we have to win 2 road games just to get into the 8th seed. So like, how did all that rest like in January help now? And it's like, those people are gone.
Yeah. Now there is no long term. The marathon that you are running is cut short, you know? So it's just like, I think there's a better balance that has to happen. And I'm not saying that it's easy to do that, but they need to find it because they've done this the last couple of seasons and it hasn't worked out, you know? Okay, so the scenarios, the play-in scenarios, I'm not going to go through all of them, obviously. I'm not going to go through all of the different permutations of how 7 to 10 will shake out. Here's the simplest way to break things down, Tommy. Best case scenario. Now, there's a super best case scenario where the Lakers get 7th, but that would require Sacramento to beat Phoenix, and for Phoenix to then lose to Minnesota in their last game, and then for Sacramento to lose to Portland on the last day of the season, which is unlikely. So we're going to push that to the side, where the scenario where the Lakers get 7th. The next best case scenario, provided that the Lakers win out, in all of these scenarios, I have the Lakers win out because they have to, okay? If the Lakers win out, they will be 47-35. The best case scenario right now is, in order to get the 8th seed, which means we only play 1 game to get into the playoffs versus 2 games. If we have to play 2 if we're in the 9-10 bracket. So in order to get the 8th seed, we want the New Orleans Pelicans to beat the Golden State Warriors on the road tonight. And then we want the Phoenix Suns to beat the Sacramento Kings on the road tonight as well. If that happens, the Lakers likely end up as the 8th seed, with New Orleans at 6, Phoenix at 7, Golden State and Sacramento at 9-10 respectively. In that scenario, the Lakers play Phoenix on the road in the 7-8 play-in game. And then if they win, they obviously, you know, are the 7th seed. And I think they'll play, right now, they'll play the Minnesota Timberwolves. If they lose that game, the Lakers will then have to play the winner of Golden State and Sacramento, likely Golden State. And then they'll have to play Denver as the 8th seed. But you at least obviously want to give LeBron James and Anthony Davis a shot to have a one-and-done game to get into the playoffs. So that is the best-case scenario. In my opinion, there's a more realistic scenario that goes as follows. Again, assuming LAL wins out. Golden State beats New Orleans at home tonight in Golden State. Phoenix beats Sacramento, even though it's on the road. Sacramento has just been terribly banged up without Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter, and they've been sliding. So Phoenix beats Sacramento. And in that scenario, Phoenix winds up at 6th, New Orleans winds up at 7th, Golden State at 8, Lakers at 9, and Sacramento at 10. So in this scenario, Lakers will at least have home court advantage in the 9-10 play-in game versus Sacramento. If they win that game, they will then need to beat the winner of New Orleans and Golden State to make it into the playoffs as the 8th seed to face Denver.
the loser of New Orleans and Golden State.
Sorry, the Lunar New Year. The loser of New Orleans and Golden State, they will need to beat the loser of New Orleans and Golden State to make it into the playoffs as the eighth seed to face Denver. To me, that's the more realistic scenario. Golden State beating New Orleans at home tonight, but we'll see. New Orleans has been on a roll. Now, the absolute worst case scenario that we don't want to happen is the four-way tie scenario. Because in any multi-team tie scenario at this point, the Lakers will end up last because they have the worst combined record against all of these different teams, which is so sad.
Just assume there's a tiebreaker, we lose it at this point.
Yeah, exactly. A multi-team tiebreaker. If they have a tiebreaker against the Suns, they will edge them out. But against anybody else or in a three-team or four-team tiebreaker, Lakers lose every one of those scenarios. So the worst case scenario is we do not want Sacramento to beat Phoenix tonight, and we don't want Golden State to beat New Orleans tonight. If those two things happen in conjunction, this would put us in a potential four-way tie with Golden State, Sacramento, and Phoenix. In this case, the Lakers will finish last, and seeding will go New Orleans at 6, Kings at 7, Suns at 8, Warriors at 9, and Lakers at 10. We would face the Warriors first on the road, and then have to face the loser of Kings, Suns on the road, just to make it to the playoffs to face Denver. So how do you feel about those outcomes? Do you agree with my assessment that the more realistic scenario is probably the Lakers end up at 9th because Golden State beats New Orleans tonight? Or do you have hope that New Orleans can beat Golden State, Phoenix beat Sacramento on the road, and the Lakers win out, which is important, which is an important part that I don't want to overlook.
Yeah, exactly. With LeBron and AD, I feel a little bit okay about that, especially knowing that these are like must-win games. But I think, well, I don't know. I guess New Orleans is going to be tricky. I think your breakdown of like what the most likely outcome is, I kind of buy that. I mean, I think on the road, the Pelicans, I feel like they have a decent chance to take down the Warriors. I feel like the Warriors, they've been pretty hot. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won 3 straight. I mean, again, it's like I was saying earlier, everyone was talking on the Lakers side about how well the Lakers were doing. It was like the Lakers and the Nuggets were the two best teams in the West post January 15 or whatever. But the Warriors have been up there too. And there were times where they were sliding. And now here we are at the end of the season and they're like 2 games behind the Suns, just like we are. So I think that it's not going to be an easy game. I just think that the Pelicans have enough defensive talent and match up really well with the way the Warriors want to play. And so I think that they have a shot. And to me, that's like, that's pretty key because we need the Warriors to lose so that like we don't want to have to win 2 road games to get Denver. Right. And so I think that that game and the Suns game I'm looking at as the Suns Kings game, those are pretty critical. And so I will be like watching intently just to see what happens there, because that's pretty much going to set the course. And I think it's realistic that both of those, the Suns and the Pelicans, could win on the road tonight. But we have to see.
I guess I'll say prepare for the Lakers to be 9th in the event that Golden State holds serve at their home court. But it is realistic to have the Pelicans, because they're on a roll right now. It is realistic that the Pelicans beat Golden State at home. So hold out hope that the Lakers can get to the 8th seed, but be prepared that they're likely going to be the 9th seed. And I think that's an okay scenario because, well, at least we have home court advantage that first game, you know, against the, in my scenario, it will be the Sacramento Kings, who are, again, shorthanded. So I guess in that respect, how confident are you about the Lakers? Let's say that it goes to the either the realistic scenario of the Lakers being the 9th or the worst case scenario of the Lakers being the 10th. How confident are you in LA winning 2 potential games on the road, or one at home, one on the road, in order to get into the playoffs? 2 game sevens, essentially.
So it sort of depends on the breakdown, right? So I think like if we end up 9 and the Kings end up 10 and the Warriors end up 8, right? Which is an outcome that could happen if the Suns win tonight and the Warriors win tonight. I think that we could beat the Kings at home in a one and done, like loser go home scenario. I don't feel super confident that we would beat the loser of the
New Orleans
Phoenix, whoever ends up in the trio of New Orleans, Phoenix, and Golden State. Beating that team on the road, I feel a little bit less confident. The Suns have been red hot. I'm not trying to go against KD on the road in like a, you know, winner take all game. The Pelicans are getting BI back for, of course, for like the last game against us. And they like, you know, I don't know. We tend to beat them, but I feel like we don't match up great against them, especially like I feel like we somehow luck out and like avoid Zion a lot, but like we don't have an answer for Zion, you know? So that's going to be problematic. So I just don't know. Like whoever loses that first game in the 7-9 is going to, 7-8 is going to lose a really, really tough game in this scenario. And they're going to be playing at home. It's not going to be like a, you know, whatever, if we lose, who cares if we don't make the, like the Warriors, the Suns, they're going to want to make the playoffs, you know? So it's like winning two consecutive games. I don't see that as likely given how up and down this team has been. And then when the reward for you at the end of that is the Denver Nuggets, like it's just like, it feels like kind of futile, like especially if we go into it knowing that we're going to play Denver. I mean, I could easily see us losing that first game. Just because we know what's waiting for us at the end of these two wins.
Yeah, it's a tough situation no matter how you look at it. I guess the positive thing, though, is, again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we are going to see whether LeBron James and Anthony Davis can put their money where their mouth is. There's no reason to doubt them, right? They haven't failed us in such a scenario yet. We're going to see how much they can carry a team. You know, seeding doesn't matter. They're going to face whatever opponent is ahead of them. They like their chances in a one and done situation, right? How true is that? Because we're going to see it twice, potentially. Okay, let's say the best case scenario happens and the Lakers are in the eighth seed facing the Suns in a one and done game on the road. You said you don't like that scenario, but that is our best case scenario. To give LeBron James and Anthony Davis a shot at getting this done in one game and getting the seventh seed and potentially facing, I mean, the Minnesota Timberwolves aren't that much better, but it's better than the Denver Nuggets. So in that scenario, how do you like the Lakers' chances? If mentally LeBron and AD are like, one game, I know it's on the road, we go balls to the wall.
Yeah, I think in one game, like, you need to win one game, like, and LeBron and AD are healthy. Rest of our like lineup, except for Vando, is healthy. We know who our opponent is. You know, there's obviously going to be like the day off of rest. I'm still taking us, I think, over most teams. I think I mentioned at the beginning of this, if we get the Warriors in a play-in scenario and it's win one to advance, I like our chances because I don't think the Warriors are going to beat us four times in a row. I think similarly, like the Suns, we had a couple of tough losses to them, or maybe one just tough loss when guys were injured. I think, you know, I think that most matchups we can win one to get in. I just worry about the team mustering up the strength to win two. I mean, like even in a seven game series, you can imagine them like building up the energy to squeak out one of the first two road games in the seven game series, but like winning both, unlikely. And you don't have to win both, right? But the problem is with the play-in, you do have to win both because it's not a best of seven. So that's what I'm worried about.
So here's how I'll break it down. If the Lakers fit into my realistic scenario bracket and they do end up getting ninth and Sacramento is 10th, I like us obviously getting out of that first play-in game. And I like us if we then face Golden State on the road, Tommy. I don't like us if we have to face New Orleans on the road. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I feel like with the Golden State Warriors, LeBron James just leaves it all out on the floor against Steph Curry, right? And we have that history of almost ending their, maybe we did end it last season, ending their dynasty. And I'm sure LeBron would be thrilled to absolutely put a stamp on that again in that scenario. And we've seen Golden State this year. They're such a wonky
That's
crew.
What I'm saying.
Like Draymond could get himself ejected.
Yeah, like, they're very high variance. So that's why it's like when we were talking about this earlier, it's like, you don't want to have to play Golden State if you lose that game and you're going home, like in a win or go home situation, but like in a win one to get in and then you have a second chance if you lose, like I'm fine playing Golden State. They're high variance enough to where you could just take that and sort of roll the dice. And like I said, three times in a row they've beaten us. I'm taking my chances. They're not going to beat us four times in a row if we have healthy AD and LeBron.
Yeah, what I'm saying, though, is I'm okay even if we have to play two play-in games and they're our second opponent,
even if we have to play them on the road.
Because I would prefer that over playing New Orleans on the road for that second game, because New Orleans is just kind of, I feel like, false sense of security, and also we just haven't faced them in this type of environment. You know, they could throw things at us that I feel like we're not ready for. They have more wing players like Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Zion is going crazy. They do have Jonas Valanciunas to even impede AD a little bit and rough him up. And then Brandon Ingram's coming back. It's just like, there are too many unknown variables for me. Whereas with the Golden State Warriors, we know them. It's going to be a tough, grinded out match with them, but at least we know them. New Orleans, I'm like, I don't know, man. Like,
yeah, no, I
they could just, it could just be wild. They could throw a haymaker and yeah, we wouldn't expect it. But yeah, with that said, it's a tough look no matter how you shake it. But again, this group has been resilient, and we're going to find out one way or another whether LeBron James and Anthony Davis can still carry a team when it matters the most. And fun fact, Tommy, D'Angelo Russell has played two play-in games in his life. One went terribly bad, the one that you saw last year versus the Wolves when he only had like 2 points and 8 assists and was benched down the stretch. But then the other one, Tommy, went terribly right, because D'Angelo Russell's other play-in game was versus the Clippers when he played with the Minnesota Timberwolves and dropped 29 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 steals, hit a bunch of clutch shots to help Minnesota advance to the playoffs. And that was with Karl Anthony Towns fouling out in the fourth quarter, and D'Lo essentially had to carry the day along with Anthony Edwards. But no one will tell you about that particular D'Angelo Russell game in which he came up big when it mattered the most, because it doesn't fit the narrative that people have about D'Angelo Russell. All that to say, we're going to need two types of those games for D'Angelo Russell this season. So hopefully he finds some redemption in that respect. Anyways, that should do it for this episode. Clench your butt cheeks, say your prayers. Go Lakers, go. Finish the season strong, and let's hope that the basketball gods are on our side with regards to New Orleans winning and the Phoenix Suns winning tonight. And also the Lakers have to beat the Memphis Grizzlies. It's going to be so funny if New Orleans does their job, Phoenix does their job, and for some reason we lose to Trey Jameson. But maybe that's the tale of the season regardless. With that said, we will catch you guys next time. Tommy, I will see you when the Lakers are in the playoffs. How about that?
Hey.
See ya.
Peace.
Laters.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.